Gabby Stroud and her powerful and moving memoir, Teacher, has captured Australia's attention and is part of the current news cycle. In 2014, Gabby was a very dedicated teacher with over a decade of experience. Months later, she resigned in frustration and despair. In her powerful memoir, Gabby tells the full story. How she came to teaching, what makes a great teacher, what our kids need from their teachers, and what it is that finally broke her. A brilliant and heartbreaking memoir that cuts to the heart of a vital matter of national importance. Please welcome Gabby Stroud.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm always amazed that people want to hear what I have to say. I'm so thrilled with the idea of this festival being the festival of open minds. An open mind, a flexible mind, a mind that can consider the grey area as well as the polarities of black and white. A mind that is fertile and receptive, critical and responsive. Let me tell you, that is a beautiful thing. I know. Because I used to work in the business of open minds. Once, not that long ago, I was a teacher, and the opening of minds was the work that I did. I can remember one morning being out on the playground at St. Pat's, here where I worked for many years, and it was a cold, frosty, bigger morning, and I was on playground duty, and the children around me don't seem to feel the cold the way I do, and I'm rugged up and layered, and they're just running around, you know, quite happily, and their breath, you know, is visible in front of them. And I came upon one of the students in my class. She was in year one. Her name was Bianca, and she was standing at the handrail to some stairs that we have at the school there. And she was at this handrail, and she's belting it. Bang! Bang! And the handrail, in response, was vibrating. And I watched her for a time, and I went up to her, and I said, Bianca, what are you doing? And she said, watch me, Mrs. Stroud. I can make it shiver. I was taken with her use of the word shiver. And as I reflect on that story today, I'm still moved by her word choice, her ability to reach for a descriptor that may not be correct, but it still captured the idea. And it was because her mind was open. Her use of language was not yet constrained by an awareness of limitations. In that moment, I witnessed Bianca reaching effortlessly for words that would explain her understanding of the world. It was a small but exhilarating moment for me as a teacher on that cold and shivery morning. It's my belief that as we arrive into this world, our minds are open. As a newborn baby, we don't know anything yet, and yet instinctively we do know. Our mind is open, available, curious, seeking, questioning. We cry for food, we seek touch for comfort, we sleep when we're tired, we eat when we're hungry. And if those little minds are handled with care by the adults around them, they arrive at school ready to be opened further. In one of the years when I was teaching kindergarten, I remember beginning my maths lesson with the question of, who knows what the word area means? And a young man named Marley raised his hand, and I said, yes, and he raised it with such confidence. And I said, yeah, Marley, tell me, what does area mean? And he said, well, someone's got more hair than you. You say they're area. And very gently I said to him, you're talking about being hairier. I'm asking about an idea called area. Huh, he said by way of reply. Huh. And I watched as his understanding of the world and the word slotted into the complex maze of ideas that he had already configured within his mind during his 6 years on the planet. I watched him as he nodded and contemplated and considered and said, huh, hairier. In that moment, he was slotting new information into the existing schemas that were already embedded in his mind. He was placing an idea into this fertile place where it would, over time, if handled carefully, become a deep conceptual understanding. This is what learning is, and it happens best when minds are free to be open, to be curious and questioning and creative and seeking and innovative. It truly is a kind of magic. Just stay with me on this one for a moment and just think about this idea of learning. Because what happens when we learn is a teacher or a more able or someone who already understands something sits beside us. And through a conversation or an activity or a demonstration or a story, the idea that they already understand transfers into this learner that is sitting beside them. It's natural Bluetooth. Nothing's plugged in. No one connects. We don't recharge on this. This idea goes from my brain as teacher to this brain as learner. Like, that's just incredible when you think about it. Is it like, that's just extraordinary what's happening in that moment. When we're learning, it's not only an opening of the mind, but an opening of the future, of possibility. When we are learning and teaching in the way that opens minds, we are encouraging risk-taking and conversations, questioning and consideration. When minds are opening in classrooms, we become aware of other open minds. We develop empathy and authenticity. We find our voice and we find the ability to listen. Now, I want you to imagine what happens to an open mind, to a learner, to learning, when we take that magical, extraordinary moment of considering something new, and we attempt to measure it. What happens when we ask, who learnt that best? Who learnt that quickest? Whose mind opened widest? Who understands this most? What happens? Minds close. Here's the thing. There's a misconception among policymakers and politicians and education administrators that schools are a place where students take their open minds ready to be filled. As though school is a place where lids are put on brains after information has been poured in. As though students are empty vessels ready to be filled. As though teachers are robotic distributors and disseminators of knowledge, skills, and information. It's my great fear that something sinister is happening in our schools. And it runs under the guise of equity and excellence, accountability, and measurement. It is a slow permeation of standardisation and, ironically, the damage it has done is beyond measure. Minds are slowly closing as our students become disenchanted, disengaged, and disheartened. Our students are growing down, not up. What happens to the open minds of Marley and Bianca as they grow into a school system where their efforts are measured and quantified and graphed and compared, where their collaborative results are used to rank the quality of their entire school on a website? The layers of standardisation currently imposed on schools do nothing more than force these beautiful, flourishing, brave young minds to slowly, slowly close. Pasi Sahlberg, the Finnish professor of education policy, says that the worst enemy of curiosity is standardisation. And I believe that a case could be made that standardisation closes minds. So it's now time for us to think about what we value as a community, as a society, and as a nation. Because if it is standards and performance and rank and data, then we should just keep on keeping on until all the forms are filled and our minds are closed. But if we value curiosity and creativity and innovation and empathy, if we value being hairier and watching the cold pole shiver, if we truly value open minds, then we must stop right now. We must object to standardisation. We must add our voice to the important conversations. We must refuse to be compliant because it is the path of least resistance. And when we see a hoop that we are expected to jump through, we must tip it sideways, step inside it, and do the hula. What good are our open minds if we don't use them? Thank you.
Thank you, Gabby.
I could go a wine now.
Yeah. We're all in that queue, I think, Gabby.
A quick comment, if that's kosher. I think what you're talking about in school and with especially youngest kids is the most important place, but I just want to note that I think it goes all through our society in higher education. I was in research up the hill for many years, and then they started on the accountability, et cetera, rubbish. And I'm supposed to write a program for the next 5 years, and I'm a research scientist. If I know what I'm going to discover in 5 years, then I'm not doing my job, am I?
I certainly like your freedom model. I would even like a much freer model, though. You know, a school where we teach morals, or where we teach aesthetics, where we teach an appreciation of arts, humanity. We talk about philosophy to young kids. We give them stories about morality. You know, what is good behaviour, bad behaviour. I've certainly went through a school system that was more free, that freer than the system that you talk about, yet I felt very unfree even in that system.
I get asked often what the solution is, and my answer is always, because it's such a really big, complex question. And what I keep coming back to is we really need what I call a dramatic reimagining of what education could look like in this country. Because, you know, there are things we can look to that we did in the past that worked, but we also need to think about the future that we're growing our children into. And as we've heard today, you know, that future is almost beyond my imagining sometimes. So we really need to think about what we need to teach and why we need to teach it, and then I think most importantly, how that should be taught. So, you know, we have work to do with all our open minds.
One of our children's best advocates, Gabby Stroud, and she's one of us. Thank you.